Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. Death-defying fire performers are wowing crowds at a high-temperature international fire festival in Rotomka, a village near the Belarusian capital of Minsk. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Belarus.
If you can't stand the heat, certainly don't head to Rotomka's International Fire Festival. Cheering crowds and heavy rock music are greeting a collection of international guests from as far afield as the US, Costa Rica and France. There are also various so-called fire theatres from Belarus, Russia and Ukraine. Organised by private company Bets by Service, the MIF26 International Fire Festival follows several smaller-scale spring and autumn events in Minsk, which began in 2013. Wowing crowds with his brave fire-taming performance is Sergei Poritsky from Ukraine. He goes by the stage name Zerg.
You know, there are people who might be predisposed to this. There are some whose first reaction when they are invited to touch fire is fear, and you won't be able to make them work with it. For money, nor glory, nor anything else. On the other hand, there are people whose eyes, once they get the fire in their hands, instantly flash with interest, and from that moment on, they won't leave it alone.
Fire performer Vyacheslav Diamidov from the Russia-based Live Fires says it's the combination of different arts that makes their performance so unique.
The important thing is we have here a combination of arts, dancing, circus, and pyrotechnics. We like this, and this is most important.
Fire artist Yevgeny Shevchenko from the Belarus-based Maori says it started as a hobby.
It was a hobby that has turned into something bigger, which we can't put aside. And that's why we continue to surprise our audience.
Towards the end of the show, even the audience gets to try a spot of fire handling, although on a much smaller scale.
Just magnificent. In reality, this is a feast. Beautiful. It's so impressive.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Parents in Argentina are spending hundreds of dollars on etiquette lessons for their children. Aged between 6 and 13, the children are taught how to eat properly at a formal meal. The idea is to coach children more used to slumber parties to dine like an aristocrat. Here's Bridget Graves with this postcard from Argentina.
This is not your average vacation activity, and there's not a Pokemon in sight. Welcome to the exclusive Alvia Hotel in Buenos Aires. The dining room tables are set as if for lunch at Downton Abbey, and the diners are dressed in their Sunday best. School-aged children between 6 and 13 years old take their places at the circular tables and are served a gourmet meal. It might not look like it, but this is a lesson in manners. Guided by etiquette experts, they will learn how to eat in a formal setting, so they can do so with the same familiarity as other children might devour a hamburger. The course is coordinated by etiquette expert Karina Vallea.
Ellos aprenden.
They learn that once they acquire these rules of etiquette, they'll never again forget them. And then to implement them every day in their lives, they will just do it naturally.
The assistants stand behind each child to teach them how to pick up the napkins, put their arms at the correct angle when eating, and how to manage tableware properly. Lunch consists of a starter of warm corn soufflé with brie cheese and tapenade with garden vegetables, which in other words is boiled corn, a very popular meal in Argentina. For the main course, the children have beef tenderloin with winter vegetables. Politeness and discretion are key lessons and highly valued by the parents and grandparents, who have paid more than $100 per child for the three-hour-long tuition. Maria Esther Garcia Quinta decided to bring her four grandchildren to the event as a way of preparing them for potential jobs.
This opens many doors for them. It's mainly for work. People are often invited to have a meal as part of the interviewing for a job process, so the employer can see how a candidate really is. It shows the education of a child.
8-year-old Matilda is looking forward to an invitation to tea with the Queen one day.
If, for example, the Queen invites you to have a cup of tea or to lunch, you have to do it with good manners. Otherwise, she won't invite you again.
But not everyone is a fan. Child psychologist Cincha Gilpo-Giez says children should be allowed to be themselves.
Si el chico se va a estar mirando con qué cubierto tiene que
If the child is concentrating on what silverware he has to use, or is thinking that he can take a piece of bread even if he's hungry, or where he should put his glass once he stops drinking, he will be more aware of this than of communicating, or of the link that can be generated within the scope of the dinner or lunch. The truth is, this can hinder spontaneity within family life.
For Karina Vallea, it's a way to promote the manners which she thinks were once widespread and have been discarded by modern life.
A partir de esa situación tan básica como el tener un...
From something basic like being in a good mood, we do this good manners lesson in order to, I think, get back the society that we had once.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A hot dog made by a team from Kurdistan is being celebrated as the best in the world. Competitors from 8 countries have been trying to impress a jury of food writers and fellow chefs in Copenhagen, including Danish star chef René Redrepi. Here's Nick Lanigan with this postcard from Denmark.
This Japanese chef is preparing hot dogs, but with a difference. Not only are they made of lobster, they were also created by Hiroki Yoshitake, the head chef at Sola, a Michelin-starred restaurant in Paris. No wonder this queue is growing. Nearby, leading Norwegian chef Knut Lake is drawing a sizable crowd too with his grilled lamb sausages. The occasion? Like Yoshitake, he's competing in Top Dog Charity, an event to determine the world's best hot dog. The competition is held at the National Museum in Copenhagen as part of the Danish capital's annual cooking and food festival. Chefs from 8 countries have come up with hot dog recipes to raise money for the humanitarian charity Care Denmark. Ole Trolso is a co-organiser of the event. He's also a restaurant critic for Danish financial newspaper Borsen and a judge in the competition.
Today's about finding out who makes the best gourmet hot dog in the world. And for that purpose, we have invited a number of high-profile chefs from around the world. And we have asked a lineup of high-profile judges to come and help us decide what is the best gourmet hot dog.
The team representing Kurdistan is comprised of chefs who work at restaurant SAK on the Danish island of Samsø. They describe their entry as a Middle Eastern sheesh dog. It includes a lamb's heart kebab with salad, hummus, yogurt, crispy garlic and spicy aubergine. Also using offal is English chef Douglas McMaster, who owns the zero-waste restaurant Silo in Brighton. He's teamed up with fellow Englishman Samuel Nutter and his Swedish colleague Victor Wagman, former Noma chefs, who now run the highly regarded Danish restaurant Bro. To reflect their shared philosophy of using all parts of the animal and leaving nothing to waste, McMaster, Nutter and Wagman have created what they call hot love dogs. It's a hot dog made using bull's testicles and topped with cherry-glazed cow's uterus, crispy fried bull's penis and candied rose petals. Food editor Angela Yang isn't daunted by the ingredients.
I think it's pretty nice. The sausage tastes sort of like Chinese pork minced.
However, the judges were unanimous in their decision and eventually awarded the top prize to the chefs from Kurdistan. Denmark's Princess Marie presents the winning team with their certificate. Anas Amin is a Kurdish chef at Restaurant SAK.
This was the first hot dog from Kurdistan and the best. I'm really happy and I hope that the world can see Kurdish culture with the food and the fresh flavor in our food.
Top Danish chef René Redzepi praises the winning hot dog.
That one won because the use of spice and intensity of flavor, the kebab meat done as a sausage, it was just so good, it was so tasty. It's not easy. Doing these things are not easy. You might say it's just a hot dog, but it's not. You know, it's everybody knows baking good bread is not easy, and making a good sausage and all the pickles and all that stuff, I don't know, you have to commit a lot of time to it.
As well as England, Japan, Norway and Kurdistan, the Top Dog charity event drew chefs from Belgium, Denmark, Ireland and Venezuela.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
An Aboriginal model has narrowly missed out on being crowned Miss World Australia. Here's Wang Jing with this postcard from Australia.
A nervous Magnolia Mamou just before the start of the Miss World Australia pageant. She's already made history by being the first contestant from the Northern Territory.
I'm very excited because all my family are here, everyone is watching me.
Her grandmother, Bemba Pui Ganamba, is among the many family and friends supporting her.
All the family sitting around the campfire and then waiting for the news.
Mamou grew up a little differently from most catwalk models in the remote Arnhem Land community of Irkalla. A career in modelling was far from her radar until she was spotted by a talent scout while finishing her studies in Darwin. Since then, Magnolia Mamou has become an international name, especially important among the indigenous community in Arnhem Land called the Yonglongu.
To have little girls in Italy research about Australia because of me, I have achieved my goal. I've got one country already learning about my country.
She's showing other Yolo that she's a strong woman, that no matter what colour you are, you can achieve in the end.
While the Miss World Australia crown went to student Madeline Cowie, Mamou finished in the final 10. Her manager, Mihaly Sangaris, says she's a winner regardless.
She's created a conversation with Australians that, you know, we haven't actually seen girls that look like Magnolia before on the runway.
Since being selected for the pageant, Mamou has been juggling photo shoots and magazine requests with her day job as a sports and recreation officer in Irkalla. The 19-year-old has also just been announced as the face of a major Melbourne shopping centre. Mamou is also keeping busy away from the catwalk. With plans to go to university to study teaching, the bright lights of Miss World might soon fade into the background.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Scientists in the UK are making violins using spider silk, and they say just 3 stands can have a profound effect on the sound of the instrument. According to the team that crafted the violin, the silk will allow the music to be customized and manipulated to exactly what the musician is after. Here's Michael Butterworth with this postcard from the UK.
If anything is going to make Antonio Stradivari turn in his grave, it's this. These violins aren't made from wood, they're composed of silk and resin. Johanna Bernard and Helena Zwock from the Royal College of Art are trying them out for size by plucking some scales. The violin Bernard is playing has a secret ingredient, spider's silk. The violin's creator is postgraduate engineer Luca Alessandrini from Imperial College London.
Spider silk has probably the highest propagation velocity that I ever had the chance to discover, let's say. It is due to his very, very high elasticity and also his, let's say, fairly low density.
The makeup of the instruments is 70% woven silk and 30% resin. According to Alessandrini, it's a material that can even challenge carbon fiber. He chose violins because they have a strong traditional history of craftsmanship. Master violin makers and repairers are still based in the Italian city of Cremona, where Stradivari created his world-famous instruments. It was to this group that Alessandrini turned when he wanted to build his violins. If you look closely below the bridge of one of the violins, you can see 3 strands embedded in the body. These are the spider's silks. They're 35 centimetres long and run along the entire length of the instrument. The silk is from a golden orb silk weaver spider, or Nephila, which is found in Australia.
I decided to place them under the bridge, following the suggest of some good luthiers from Cremona that collaborated to this project, in order to basically changing the propagation velocity on the top of the violin, and also due to the fact that spider silk is an extremely strong material, it is able to balance the complex system of stresses that are constantly acted inside a violin, such as we have the pull of the string that are pulling to the bottom, and only with a tiny amount of it is able to balance this and to make a change in the sound and basically in the instrument itself.
The silk from the violins came from the Oxford Silk Group, a body of researchers at Oxford University who are studying the biology of silk in minute detail. Studies have already shown that, in addition to being strong and elastic, the webs have electrostatic properties and are pulled towards negative and positive charges. Alessandrini says the master violin makers have been astonished by the results.
I asked them to compare the 2 instruments, and the second one was definitely sounding better, definitely, but it was the overall opinion, with no doubt.
Alessandrini admits he was aiming to be provocative and controversial in choosing such an iconic instrument. At last, it's time for the musicians to strike a cheerful and celebratory chord. Bernard is playing with the spider silk violin and is convinced there's a distinct difference in its acoustics.
I feel like it's quite a nice alternative because it's lighter than mine, and we carry around a lot of stuff during the day, and so it's a nice alternative. But generally, I would more go with my wooden because it's a bigger sound, it's louder.
The aim of the engineers, though, is not really to make violins.
Changing the structure, the inner structure of the material, makes the material resonate differently. Well, the goal of my project was to demonstrate that it's possible to make a material sound differently, changing its inner structure using fibers. So those 2 violins are a sort of proof of concept. My goal, my aim, wasn't to create good violins, but to create manufacturing technique that can be applied to other products such as speakers, an amplifier, actually realized an amplifier as well.
Alessandrini is hoping this is just the beginning of discoveries that can potentially revolutionize acoustic-related industries and increase our use of bioengineered materials.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Officials in France say lives are being put at risk by inexperienced climbers and overcrowding on the highest mountain in the Alps. They're accusing some visitors of treating Mont Blanc like a theme park, with no respect for the risks they face. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from France. At 4,800 meters, this is Western Europe's highest mountain, but it is also one of the deadliest. Each year, around 50 people die in the Mont Blanc massif area. 200 will attempt to reach its highest peak each day during the summer, and this is causing crowding on the narrow pathways. Mont Blanc guide Yann Delaveau says,
because it's very famous and it's the highest peak of Europe, then there's many people coming to Mont Blanc. And the crowds makes the statistics. But definitely if you take the regarding the number of people attempting the Mont Blanc and the accident, I don't think it's the most dangerous mountain in the world.
There are different routes to the summit of Mont Blanc, but none of them is easy. There are concerns some travel agents are not making this clear enough. Local guides like Sjin Hagen say many people are inexperienced and unprepared for the potential dangers.
Now and then you'd see people just taking the lift up to the Guide Midi in shorts and shoes and just walk out and start walking down the arête where you should have crampons and ice axe to walk down, you know, and a lot of people don't understand that this is the high mountains. I think it's an amusement park. You know, you could get altitude sick or you could get a lot more tired than you would anywhere else, and all of a sudden you're not capable of taking care of yourself.
Around 1,000 rescues are carried out every year by specialist mountain rescue teams. Many of those incidents happen here. This is the Grand Couloir, which is part of the most popular route to the summit. It is considered the most accessible route, but is far from safe. The steep gorge is subject to almost constant rockfall in high temperatures. In the last 2 decades, this section alone has resulted in at least 74 deaths and 180 injuries.
One thing in the mountains is always look up. Dangers is things that are falling from above, and that could be rockfall, but it also can be serac falls, which is a serac is basically a hanging glacier that hangs over the edge.
Guides hope that educating people more about climbing Mont Blanc and what it entails will help reduce the number of casualties. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated, and you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.